The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
And so it has happened. Despite Donald Trump's best efforts to overturn the will of the American people, he is no longer the president and Joe Biden has been sworn in. We'll have some audio from the ceremony in just a little while. But Marion McKeown joins us from Washington. Marion, you're a veteran of many inauguration ceremonies. How different was this in the absence of a crowd?
Matt, there was no comparison, but there were things that you would expect and appreciate from an inauguration. Let's go through the differences first. Okay, so obviously the one jarring thing was seeing Capitol Hill ring fenced by razor wire and non-scalable fences, seeing the military and military trucks, people, you know, our National Guards with machine guns pointed at you all over the Capitol, the concrete bunkers. It was, you know, all of the things that usually have a carnival atmosphere at an inauguration, like even the hundreds of people who turn out and they sell merchandise and they dress up as Uncle Sam. And there's always that kind of feeling of, regardless of whether the president is a Republican or a Democrat, of sort of a celebration, you know, the peaceful transfer of power. And today, well, you probably saw Donald Trump's speech earlier this morning at before he left. But, you know, the country is so divided. And then in the middle of this, as Joe Biden referenced, 400,000 people dead from coronavirus in 10 months. You know, I mean, and the economy absolutely shattered. But there were so many uplifting moments as well, not least of which was an astonishing performance by Amanda Gorman after Joe Biden spoke, the young poet laureate, and also a very symbolic and powerful and courageous, I think, performance by Garth Brooks, who sang Amazing Grace, which is a traditional old black hymn in America and is regarded as such, which I'm sure won't endear him to many of his followers, but a really, you know, a gesture again of unity and symbolism. And I think Joe Biden's speech rose to the occasion. It was somber, but it was moving, it was empathic, but it was uplifting and it was resolute. And I think that's what was really needed. But there will be no balls this evening. There'll be no celebrations. There'll be none of the usual things that you attend. And, you know, we grumble about them as journalists, having to go to 20 different balls on, you know, all along the mall on inauguration night and all that. But, you know, you miss them when they're not there. This is a somber occasion. There is hope, you know, and I think Joe Biden emphasized that, and a resolve to move forward and get past this. But this is not Inauguration Day. Unlike I've been to five other inaugurations, this is nothing like any of them.
And we'll get to the clips in a second. But Cal Thomas, leaving aside whether you have any great hopes for Joe Biden as president or not, do you miss that ceremony that we normally would have had today and the crowd's been present? Is that another one of our results of COVID-19, something that's significant that we've lost?
Yes, it is, Matt, and I've been through a lot of these inaugurations too. I don't mean to sound too old, but the one I remember first as a college student was John F. Kennedy, and I still remember that ringing line of his that most people remember, if not in actuality, then by reading the history books. Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Now, that was a line written by Ted Sorensen, one of his top aides, but it was a ringing and wonderful line, and called upon the American people, not the government, to make their lives and this country better. We haven't heard words like that very often since then. But these are very special occasions, unique to America. And I agree with Marion. It's very sad that some of the pomp and ceremony, including inaugural balls, including parties before the actual inauguration day, could not occur because of COVID. I guess we're going to get into the analysis of the new president's remarks in a few moments. But I would just comment on one thing you said, Matt, in the introduction. You accused Donald Trump of trying to overturn the results of the election, and that is arguable. But, of course, that's what the Democrats have been doing for 4 years during the Trump administration, accusing him of Russian collusion and being an illegitimate president, and he didn't win the popular vote, only the Electoral College. So it cuts both ways.
As I'm in a good mood, I'm not going to argue with you about that today. But Cal, there is one thing actually does strike me just before we hear some of the Biden thing, that you mentioned John F. Kennedy, and it was highly significant back in 1960 that a Catholic, the first Catholic, had become president of the United States. And it was a major talking point at the time. And now we've moved on and Biden is the second Catholic to become president. And it's almost a by the way, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that is a very good thing. And I don't like the, you know, first this and first that. I'm more interested in the ideas than the gender, the faith, the religious background, or any of these other things. I think we focused too much on that in the United States. And there are differences in Catholics. I mean, John Kennedy was a tax-cutting Democrat. We haven't seen too many Democrats, really any since him, who were for reducing taxes. He made a tremendous speech on this for the Detroit Economic Club, I think it was 1962, about the need to reduce taxes, reduce reliance on the government, reduce regulations. Many of these things Donald Trump did, but of course today's Democrats want to do just the opposite.
Okay, let's hear some of what Joe Biden had to say in his speech. The first short extract is in which he says democracy has prevailed.
We've learned again that democracy is precious, democracy is fragile, and at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed. So now, on this hallowed ground where just a few days ago, violence sought to shake the Capitol's very foundation, we come together as one nation, under God, indivisible, to carry out the peaceful transfer of power.
And here's where he called for unity in a divided America.
Through civil war, the Great Depression, World War, 9/11, through struggle, sacrifice, and setbacks, our better angels have always prevailed. In each of these moments, enough of us have come together to carry all of us forward. And we can do that now. History, faith, and reason show the way of unity. We can see each other not as adversaries, but as neighbors. We can treat each other with dignity and respect. We can join forces, stop the shouting, and lower the temperature. For without unity, there is no peace, only bitterness and fury. No progress, only exhausting outrage. No nation, only a state of chaos. This is our historic moment of crisis and challenge. And unity is the path forward.
Of course, there were 74 million voters who didn't opt for Joe Biden, but who went for Donald Trump. So what was Biden's message for those who didn't vote for him?
To all those who supported our campaign, I'm humbled by the faith you've placed in us. To all those who did not support us, let me say this. Hear me out as we move forward. Take a measure of me and my heart. And if you still disagree, so be it. That's democracy. That's America. The right to dissent peaceably within the guardrails of our republic is perhaps this nation's greatest strength. Yet hear me clearly. Disagreement must not lead to disunion. And I pledge this to you. I will be a president for all Americans. All Americans. And I promise you, I will fight as hard for those who did not support me as for those who did.
See, Cal, you mentioned earlier that there were many Democrats who refused to accept the legitimacy of Trump's election on the basis that he lost the popular vote. There were many others who were opposed to him because they felt that he was being deliberately divisive. If you go back to his inauguration speech, The American Carnage, it sought to sow further division. Is it not better that whatever you might think of the policies that Joe Biden is likely to introduce, that at least he is there trying to seek to unite rather than to divide?
Well, Matt, that's a great goal, and I wish it could be obtained. But that's why we have two political parties in this country, because they disagree on policies. The one thing he didn't say in his inaugural address and hasn't said, even during the campaign when he's talked about healing and unifying, is how he's going to do it. He says for people who disagree with him, he's going to be their president too. Okay, so what is he willing to compromise on? Abortion? No, he's moved left on that. For 40 years, he was opposed to federally funded abortions. Now he says he is. What about foreign policy? He says he's going to re-engage Iran, the number one source of terrorism in the world. He's going to re-enter the Paris Climate Accord. Conservatives don't believe in these things. How is he going to bridge that divide? So unity is a wonderful phrase, but it's not union. And I think the struggle is going to go on. It's certainly not anything that I would expect a Democrat to do with a Republican president, and they certainly didn't do it with Bush. You know, George H.W. Bush, during his inaugural address, I'll never forget it, I was there, he turned around and reached out a hand to the then Speaker of the House, Jim Wright of Texas, offering his hand in fellowship and camaraderie. And Jim Wright shook his hand, but then he cut it off. He forced Bush to violate his election pledge, his campaign pledge not to raise taxes, which ensured that he would not get a second term. So these are wonderful words and wonderful phrases and wonderful sentiments, but in the actual outworking of our political system, they don't mean much.
But Mary McKeown, the contrast between what we heard today, and if we cast our minds back to that incendiary American Carnage speech that Donald Trump issued 4 years ago, which set the tone for his presidency.
Absolutely. And, you know, Cal, I have to say, I agree. Politics is politics. And you have two opposing parties, each of whom wants to be in power. But honestly, it seems that it's always the Democrats that you expect to move and to compromise. It's the Republicans who assaulted, or the Trump supporters who assaulted democracy, and indeed Republican senators and 139 Republican congressmen who also assaulted democracy on January the 6th by seeking to overturn the will of the people on totally trumped up charges. And I would say that while the Democrats certainly did seek to unseat Donald Trump through impeachment, they did so within the democratic process and by respecting the Constitution. They didn't do what happened under Donald Trump's watch. One is grounded in fact and in respect for the Constitution. The other is grounded in fantasy and anarchy. And I think that is the difference. So really, I think that you have to be hopeful. The thing to me that struck was that Joe Biden said was, you know, about it being a time for boldness. We will be judged on how we resolve this cascading crises of our era. Will we master this very difficult hour? I believe that we will. So I think that he is prepared to move forward. And I think that, you know, Republicans need to learn the meaning of the word compromise and to do what's good for the country as much as you call on Democrats to do it.
Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas are with us. Let's hear a little bit more, though, of Joe Biden's speech, particularly how he addressed the recent attack on Capitol Hill by Trump supporters.
And today, we mark the swearing-in of the first woman in American history elected to national office, Vice President Kamala Harris. Don't tell me things can't change. Here we stand, across the Potomac from Arlington Cemetery, where heroes who gave the last full measure of devotion, rest in eternal peace. And here we stand, just days after a riotous mob thought they could use violence to silence the will of the people, to stop the work of our democracy, to drive us from this sacred ground. It did not happen. It will never happen. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever, not ever.
Of course, the issues of what happened in Capitol Hill, something we addressed in our interview with James Comey at 4:30 here on the programme. If you missed that and want to catch up with what the former boss of the FBI who was fired by Donald Trump had to say, that will be going up as a podcast on the Today FM website. But let me go to you on that, Donald Trump. What do you expect now of the Republican Party now that Trump is out of office? Because certainly it seems there has been a change in tone of some of the senior leaders, Mitch McConnell in particular, pulling fewer punches now when it comes to blaming Trump for what happened on Capitol Hill a fortnight ago.
Are you asking me or Marianne?
Yes, Cal, you.
Oh, okay. Well, in his farewell address, he ominously to some people said he will be back. Sounded like General Douglas MacArthur after coming back to the Philippines during World War II. I think there is, for the first time, and I'm reluctant to say this, but I think there's a very good chance that Trump could lead a third party. Now, third parties have not done well in America. Ross Perot, George Wallace, going back to the early 20th century, they usually divide and let the other party win. But Trump has such a significant following, 75 million voters in the last election, that he might be able to do this. I don't think it would be good for the country, frankly. I think we need to work within the two-party system. But what else is he going to do? Is he going to come back to The Apprentice TV show? I don't think so. Having tasted political power in Washington, it's very, very difficult for anyone to give it up. So watch for that possibility. I don't think it'll necessarily succeed, but I think it has a better chance than maybe anybody else who has tried it.
Yeah, there is actually a suggestion that he thinks so, going to call this new party the Patriot Party. Yeah. Let's hear a little bit of some of the speech in front of a very sparse crowd of fans and family earlier today.
People have no idea how hard this family worked. They worked, and they worked for you. They could have had a much easier life. We've accomplished a lot. Our First Lady has been a woman of great grace and beauty and dignity. And so popular with the people, so popular with the people. In fact, honey, would you like to say a few words, please?
Being your First Lady was my greatest honor. Thank you for your love and your support. You will be in my thoughts and prayers. God bless you all. God bless your families. And God bless this beautiful nation.
We rebuilt the United States military. We created a new force called Space Force. We also got tax cuts, the largest tax cut and reform in the history of our country by far. I hope they don't raise your taxes. But if they do, I told you so. We got the vaccine developed in 9 months instead of 9 years or 5 years or 10 years. Or the first thing we have to do is pay our respects and our love to the incredible people and families who suffered so gravely from the China virus. It's a horrible thing that was put onto the world. We all know where it came from. It is my greatest honor and privilege to have been your president. A goodbye. We love you. We will be back in some form.
The vaccine developed in Germany by Turkish immigrants. Not funny enough how we didn't notice that. Well, Marion McKeown, what do you think of the possibility that he hasn't gone away? You know, that is this just bluff and bluster that he wants to pretend that he'll continue to be a significant figure? Or will he just now, denied his social media platforms, start to fade away?
I think that I agree with a lot of what Cal said, Matt. I think that he will certainly try to form a new party or a new movement or a sort of a rump of what he has been doing for the last 4 years of division and disharmony and authoritarianism. But really, he's a cult figure. What he wants to now is rebrand himself. So a political party won't survive. It'll go the way of all Trump initiatives, from Trump steak to Trump casinos to Trump airlines. It will go over a cliff in a very short time, I think. But the problem is that the danger and the unrest that he could trigger in the interim, because I think it will be a cult. It will be all about Trump, and anything he does from here on in, you know, he'll probably end up with some cranky TV or radio show and just be another talking head. I see him fading. I see whatever he does failing, but I think he could fail at a cost to the country. And eventually he will just be what he has always been, which is a disgruntled old carnival barker. You know, and that's no disrespect to a former president. It's a president who really didn't earn anybody's respect during his 4 years in office.
And just to finish off, Cal, there are many presidents who on their way out of the Oval Office have disgraced themselves with some of the pardons that they have offered. And Bill Clinton would probably be top of the list in relation to some of the people that he let off the hook with pardons or commutations of sentences. Now, Trump had done a bit of that prior to last night. There are certain individuals, Michael Flynn coming straight to mind, who probably should never have been given the free get out of jail card that they have received. But Steve Bannon facing these charges in relation to duping people, stealing money effectively off them to further a political campaign. Is Steve Bannon really a person deserving of clemency?
No, Matt, I agree with you. And not only Steve Bannon, but there have been a number of others. Now, there was one guy who was sentenced to 800 years in prison. Now, that's just a ridiculous sentence. And there are some other really seedy characters who raised, well, as you mentioned, the major thing with Steve Bannon was that he raised money to continue building the southern border wall, which he used to line his own pockets and the pockets of other people. I think it's disgraceful and disgusting, frankly. And although the power of the president is unlimited when it comes to pardons, I think there ought to be some personal and moral limits, and I don't think the president live within them in these cases.
Mary McCone, it's bizarre, isn't it? A bizarre system whereby you would have a president leaving office who could suddenly start pardoning people, commuting sentences. I mean, can you imagine a Taoiseach in this country having the power to do that on the way out of office?
No, and I'd rather not. Thank you very much. But, you know, it's yeah, I think it's one of those relics from the past that really they need to look at long and hard. Steve Bannon, you know, as Cal said, to pardon somebody for ripping off the Trump base, and like the people who tend to donate to these things don't tend to be people with a lot of money. They tend to be poor people who, you know, will donate $20 or $40. And for Bannon to rip those people off so cynically, and he was looking at jail time, there's no doubt about that, and to be then given a get out of jail free card. But can I just say, Matt, something very quickly that we haven't touched on? Two astonishing moments today because of all the other stuff which needs to be covered. But Kamala Harris, not just the first woman vice president, the first black woman vice president, her husband, the first second gentleman, and the astonishing poet laureate Amanda Gordon and the performance that she delivered. These were moments to be cherished, I think, and that we should rejoice in. One just for its grace and beauty with young Amanda Gordon and the way she performed her poem. And the second one, a moment in history that's so long overdue, that we have a formidably smart black senator who is now the vice president, and that's how it is. And also the First Lady, Jill Biden, who's going to continue her job. She's going to keep working. So I think this is a great day for women. Jill Biden isn't going to be required to, you know, just sit around the White House and follow in the footsteps of First Ladies when that role was created 150 years ago. She's going to be a truly modern First Lady, and I think a wonderful one who will really inspire women and who I think will, you know, replace the sort of the vacuous role that Melania Trump filled, you know, as a clothes horse with, you know, purpose and with energy and with good cheer as well. So a lot to celebrate today for women.
Finally, one thing, Cal Thomas, it is now being reported that although Donald Trump didn't have the good manners to turn up for Joe Biden's inauguration, he did leave a letter or a note for him. I don't know whether he used his Sharpie and how long it's actually going to be, but do you think, is it likely that we will ever be told what's in that letter?
Well, only if the president or one of his aides who reads it tells us. This has been a modern tradition since Ronald Reagan did it for his successor, George H.W. Bush. It's a very nice thing to do, and I hope he said something nice. Let me just conclude, Matt, by saying, you know how much I love you, and if I had the power, I would pardon you for all of your left-wing views.
Ah, left-wing. I tell you, most of the listeners here who accuse me of being right-wing must be baffled to hear you accusing me of left-wing, Cal. But there you go, the difference between our two countries. All right, listen, unfortunately, I don't think that's the last we'll ever be talking about Donald Trump, particularly if there is a move for impeachment. But it is going to be good, Cal. I look forward to talking to you and Marion McKeown about the Joe Biden presidency. And I promise you, Cal, we will treat it critically when it deserves to be treated critically.
I'll look forward to that.
All right. Thank you to both of you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.